So the parsha is Parshas Vayeshev, and this is the parsha of the famous story of Yosef being sold or cast into a pit first by his brothers because of the jealousy that the brothers have towards him and the enmity that they experience. And their decision to essentially, well, initially their initial decision or wish was to actually eliminate him completely because of their jealousy, which wasn't unfounded, right? It wasn't unfounded. We know that the story is this, and it's a famous, so well, everyone knows the story, that Yosef was having dreams about his lordship over his brothers and even over his parents. He was having dreams like that, and also he was also, I mean, the Midrashim talk about how he suspected them of committing some serious sins, the three cardinal sins, which is a parasha unto itself, which we're not going to go into today. But there was evidence, the way the Midrash describes it, is that he saw them doing things which were really very, very serious. It's not to be taken literally, but it's the types of things they were doing was akin to a certain level to the three cardinal sins, but again, it's not our topic for today. So he reported those things which he saw to their father. So he was malshin on them, which means that he spoke lashon hara, slander about them, and they knew that, and it caused enmity, and they were jealous of him, and he was given the special coat by their father. And seemed to have had favoritism from Yaakov. And again, the dreams that he had, these dreams of the brothers bowing down to him. So there was enmity, there was jealousy. Now, what it led to was very, very serious. It was a very serious result of them wanting to kill him. The plan was to completely and utterly eliminate him and kill him and get rid of him completely. They saw him as a threat to the future of the Jewish people. Instead of eventually killing him, they decide to sell him instead to travelers, to merchants who are traveling through the area. And that's how he ends up down in Mitzrayim. And the rest is history. Literally, the rest is history till the present day, because everything else unfolded from there. So the question, though, is this, is that, that was a very stark reaction, a very stark to go ahead and to decide to go and kill him, literally to kill him. We're talking about the Shvatim, the 12 tribes of Israel. And no one can debate their tremendous, tremendous righteousness. We know who the Rishayim are in the Chumash. We know who the wicked people are in the Chumash. There's the Esavs, the Bilams, all these different people. But the 12 Shvatim, the 12 tribes, go down in history as pious, as righteous, as the paragons of piety and righteousness. And for them to go ahead and do this, it's very, very perplexing. And also, even though there is guilt put upon their heads, but they don't lose their reputation. How do we know they don't lose their reputation? Because their names are on the breastplate. I mean, their names are on synagogue windows, the beautiful windows of certain synagogues. Well, not these ones over here. These are cinder block windows. I don't know where they are. But in certain windows, but we know the Shvat and the 12 tribes, we're named after them, Binyamin, Yehuda, Shimon, etc. The 12 tribes are righteous, so notwithstanding that what they did, they still go down as being very, very pious. So, the question is exactly how it happened. How did they come to do that? What was their such severe decision to want to completely and utterly eliminate and kill and murder their brother? And then to I'm not really asking it as a open the floor discussion. So to completely kill him, and then also to frame him and to fabricate a story about killing a goat and then lying to their father and then putting their father in misery for so many years. It's a very, very perplexing, very difficult story. So when you look in the Midrashim, some very interesting Midrashim about the story. So one Midrash says the following, that Midrash says that when Yaakov initially sent Yosef, you see, initially the brothers were shepherding the flock, they were out in the fields, and they had a rotation system. So each member of the tribe, of the brothers, stayed home with their father while the others went out and they were doing the farming and the shepherding. So Yosef was back at home, and then eventually Yosef then told, Yaakov told Yosef to go to the brothers and to go out and to see how they're doing, and I guess maybe to switch the position. But he sent, so the Pasuk says that he sent him out, that Yaakov sent him, v'yishlecheyu me'im echevron, that Yaakov sent Yosef, literally the verse says, that he sent him from the valley of Hebron. That he sent him from the valley of Hebron. That's where they were. I mean, that's the location. He sent him over there from the valley of Hebron. But the problem is, Hebron's not in a valley. It's not in a valley. It's on a hill. It's on a mountain. So it's very strange why it should say that he sent him from the valley of Hebron. But the Medrash says that the Pasuk is alluding to something. What it's alluding to is that he sent him in order to satisfy, to fulfill the profound decree that the Holy One, blessed be He, placed between Himself and the worthy companion who was buried in Hebron. That Yaakov sent Yosef in order to fulfill the decree that Hashem made with Avraham Avinu in Hebron, in the city of Hebron, or the one who's buried in Hebron, Avram is buried in Hebron, and to fulfill the profound decree. Now, how does that come from the verse? Because Emek Hebron literally means the valley of Hebron, but it's not in a valley. But Emek also means deep counsel. So the Medrash takes that word to mean that Hashem sent, that Yaakov sent him to fulfill this very, very deep decree, the deep, profound counsel and decree that Hashem made with Avraham Avinu, who is in Hebron, is buried in Hebron. The deep counsel and the deep decree which was made to Avraham Avinu, who's lying in Hebron. What is that referring to? The decree, as the Medrash says, the decree that eventually the Jewish people are going to go down to Mitzrayim and they're going to suffer there and they're going to be persecuted over there and they're going to be there for X number of years before I'm going to redeem them. So the whole purpose, the whole thing was all planned out. It was all in order to bring about the eventual descent of the Jewish people into Mitzrayim. And there was the reason why the very, very roots of this whole story, the roots of the story is this is all being orchestrated in order to bring about Yosef to be in Mitzrayim, and then Yaakov to be in Mitzrayim, and the Shvatim and the tribes to be in Mitzrayim, for eventually the Jewish people to be in Mitzrayim, to then be taken out of Mitzrayim, to be given the Torah at Har Sinai. And it all begins over here. So there's much, much bigger things going on behind the scenes. So Hashem is really orchestrating. Hashem is planning all this to take place. He's planning it all to take place. But yet at the same time, the Shvatim, the tribes themselves, are doing it. And they are doing something which on the surface is very, very immoral and unethical. But yet at the same time, Hashem is pulling the strings. He's pulling the strings. Let's just see a few more Midrashim similar to this. Another Midrash says that it says the Midianite men, traders, passed by, and they drew Yosef out of the pit and lifted him up out of the pit, and they sold Yosef to the Yishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. That was part of the story. They decided not to kill him, but they decided to sell him instead. But the Pasuk says, Yavru anashim midyanim silcharim, Midianite men, traders, passed by. So the Medrash again expounds the verse and says that you can read the words, the Yavru midyanim, not as Midianite traders pass by, but rather the word Midianim can also mean quarrels. The quarrels passed by, their quarrels disappeared. Their quarrels with Yosef like vanished and disappeared completely. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Beta said in the name of Yehuda ben Simon, Lama Tisa'enu, the verse says in Isaiah, why do you let astray from your paths? The Jewish people say to Hashem, why do you let us stray from your path, letting our heart become hardened? That is to say, when you so desired, you put it into their hearts to love. And when you so desired, you put it into their hearts to hate. Because the quarrels and the enmity disappeared at this point. At this point, it disappeared from the brothers. Mm-hmm. And then the Medrash applies this verse in Isaiah to the brothers. This verse which says, you know, why Hashem, why'd you put it inside a person's heart to love? And why'd you put it inside their heart to hate? Like all of a sudden it disappears, the quarrels disappear. Meaning to say that the feelings of either love or enmity, which are inside of our hearts, are also governed and controlled by Hashem. They're controlled by Hashem. So the brothers, up until this point, they had enmity and they were quarreling with him and they hated him. And all of a sudden, it just disappears. The pasuk of Yavru Midyanim, the Madonim, the quarrels just disappeared. And it's akin to this verse in Isaiah that Hashem, that we say to Hashem, like, what is it? What's going on? You put the desire to love inside my heart, and then you put the desire to hate inside my heart. Hashem's controlling it. So what these things are pointing to is what? Hashem's controlling everything. Hashem's controlling everything, not just the big plan, the big picture plan of getting us, of getting the Jewish people down to Mitzrayim, but is also affecting our hearts, our emotions too. Of putting inside of our feelings the actual emotions of love and hate. And I know we're thinking this goes against the idea of free will. We choose to love and we choose to hate. But this Medrash over here, based upon this pasuk, is saying Hashem puts it inside of our hearts to love and puts it inside of our hearts to hate as well. Doesn't seem to be right. Right? It doesn't seem to be right that Hashem is doing this, pulling the strings to such an extent. And then there's another Medrash which says that, again, speaking about going down to Mitzrayim and Yaakov and Yosef, so Medrash compares it. It says to a para, really, Hashem wanted Yaakov to be there. He wanted him to be there, and he really wanted Yaakov, but to pull Yaakov down to Mitzrayim and then have the tribes come along with him, it wasn't bekovedik. It wasn't respectful to have Yaakov go down to Mitzrayim. So again, he pulls the strings. Everything is being put. The strings are being pulled, and the Medrash compares it to a para, to a calf, and a calf which is being pulled to the slaughterhouse. And, well, not the calf, the cow. The cow is being brought to the slaughterhouse, and the cow doesn't want to go. So what do? So they pull the calf, the baby calf, to the slaughterhouse instead. And then the mother cow that loves the calf so much is automatically drawn after it and ends up going to the slaughterhouse as well, because once the calf is easy to be pulled to the slaughterhouse, so the calf goes, right? Now the mother, because of the love the mother has for the calf, the mother chases after it, and then it all ends up in the slaughterhouse as well. So the same thing with the Medrash says is Yaakov and Yosef. Yosef is like the calf. The calf is being pulled to the slaughterhouse, to Mitzrayim, in order to facilitate Yaakov to go after him because he loves him so much, because he can't be separate. When they eventually meet each other, when he finds out later on that he's still alive, so then Yaakov has to go down there. He wants to follow his son. He wants to be there with his son, his beloved son. So it's all part of the plan. Like Hashem, so Hashem first brings Yosef down there to then compel Yaakov to go down there, and then the Shvatim as well. But all of this, so the whole thing is all being done by Hashem. The whole thing is all being done by Hashem. So again, the choices which they're making to bring this about seem to play a very, very small role in the big process, in the big thing, in the big picture plan, that Hashem is controlling it all, is pulling the strings, making it all happen. Probably one of the most startling midrashim or gemaras linked to this, and how Hashem essentially, what this is really bringing out, is how Hashem tinkers and fiddles with our free will. Like he's fully fiddling with our free will and putting inside of our hearts our emotions and our feelings of hatred and love, and you know, bringing things about, making things happen so that certain things should take place. Probably the most startling Gemara which illustrates this. This is a Gemara, and it says the following. It says, "Lo David roya leusa maisa." The David HaMelech was not fitting to commit the sin that he did with Bathsheba, right? The Bathsheba with the killing of Uriah Achita, and then the murder of Uriah Achita, the bringing about him being to be killed in the war, to then take his wife Bathsheba. This whole story shouldn't have taken place, and it's not as big of a sin. Can I underscore this? The Gemara says it's not as big of a sin as you think it is. There's more to the story, but still he was held accountable for this whole story, and that's why he wrote the famous chapter of Tehillim, which speaks about Teshuvah, and it becomes a paragon of Teshuvah. But that really wasn't fitting. Really, his internal... Really, his internal self-control, right? His internal self-control was such that he wouldn't have succumbed to the sin. He wouldn't have succumbed to the sin. And similarly, the Chet Egel, the sin of the golden calf. The Jewish people were not fit for sinning with the golden calf. So lama asu, why did they do it? Lo malucha, shimchot, in order to teach you that if anyone does a sin in the future, they can do teshuva. The whole reason why, as Rashi says, they were resolute people with control over their impulses, which would not have been able to overcome, which would not have been able to overcome them had it not been for a divine decree that the impulse should hold sway in order to give hope to penitence. So what this Gemara is telling us, that the sin of the golden calf and the sin of David and Melech, within their own personal capacity, they need not have done it, or they weren't suitable for even doing those sins, but they were compelled to sin. They were compelled to do the Chet HaEgel, and David HaMelech was compelled to do the sin with Bathsheba in order to then do teshuva afterwards, in order to be examples throughout history of teshuva. Wow. That's what the Gemara says. And this is, you know, I'll read it again. Yochan said in the name of Shimon ben Yochai, the author of the Zohar, neither was David worthy of that deed with Bathsheba, nor were Israel worthy of that deed with the golden calf. Why then did they do it? In order that if an individual has sinned, they didn't do it because they chose to do it, they weren't worthy of doing it. In order that if an individual has sinned, he can be told, go and follow the example of an individual David who repented. And if a community sins, they can be told, go and follow the example of that community of Israel which repented. And again, Rashi says, they were resolute people with control over their impulses, which would not have been able to overcome them had it not been for the divine decree that the impulse should hold sway in order to give hope to penitence. Right? So where's our free will? Where's our free will? We got these stories over here that Hashem is compelling and making these things happen. You know, the sale of Yosef and the descent of Yosef to Mitzrayim is all being orchestrated, all being planned, to the point that even their feelings, the quarreling and the desire to hate Yosef was put into their heart. And now the desire to not hate Yosef is being put inside, to now love Yosef is inside their heart. Hashem is pulling everything being pulled from above. Everything is being controlled from above, right? The calf is being pulled to the slaughter in order to compel the mother to go after it. Emek Chevron, that Yaakov sends Yosef from the valley of Chevron, alluding to the fact that to the idea that this is all being done in order to fulfill the decree which was said to Avraham Avinu that they're going to be enslaved in Mitzrayim. Where's the free will? Where's the free will and where's the guilt? And to say they're not guilty, to say that they were not guilty, the Pasuk says that they were jealous. And it says they were jealous of Yosef. So that's a statement of a sin. And there's plenty of sources which speak about how that they were held guilty and they were held responsible. But yet you got these other sources saying that it was all being pulled from above, or everything is being controlled from above. So what's going on? And really the question is, in general, you know, it really speaks to this tension that always exists between the principle of free will and divine providence. Free will and Hashem's intervention. This really is an example of the interplay between our decisions and how Hashem is controlling what's going on, which is a very, very perplexing subject and very, very big subject about our free will and divine providence and divine control. So the concept is that, first of all, you know, obviously we have free will. We all know that we have free will. But there's a very famous and very just a beautiful and insightful explanation given by the Chovos HaLevavos, the duties of the heart, about how free will works. It's very, very important to understand this. It's something which really can stay with us all the time. And the Chovos HaLevavos says, I'll read what he says. It says, acts of service to God as well as sinful acts against God can only be performed by man when three things combine. So whatever you do, whether good or bad, that action can only take place when three things combine. Three things combine. One is the choice of his heart and mind. The choice that this is good or the choice that this is bad. Knowing and choosing that this is a good thing or a bad thing. Number two, the intention and resolution to do what he has chosen to do. Because even if you choose something, you don't necessarily follow through to doing it. You got to now resolve to do it. You can choose to, choose to give tzedakah. And the choice, though, there's different levels of that choice. You can choose, it's the right thing to give tzedakah. I should give tzedakah. And it is good. But it doesn't necessarily mean you're going to do it. You're still going to make a mental choice in the moment of resolution. It's like a high level of choice. You've got to choose that the thing is a good thing. You've got to choose that the thing is a worthwhile thing to do. And now you have to make a resolution that I'm actually going to do it. That's number two, is the intention, the resolution to do what you've chosen to do. Number three is the endeavor to translate the will into action and project thought into deed. And now it's the actual action after you've made the resolution. So let's say I've decided tzedakah, I've signed up on tzedakah. If I signed on the dotted line, tzedakah is a good thing, and I want to do it, I want to start giving tzedakah. And now a person walks into the room, right? So I've still got to go one step further to now make the resolution to give the tzedakah to this fellow who's coming in. So I reach into him and say, now that's the resolution. Now the action. So now I put my hand in my pocket to take the dollar out to give it to him. And lo and behold, right, I reach inside my pocket, and the dollar's not there. Because it fell out, because when I was walking into the building, I had a tissue in my pocket, and the tissue was where the dollar was. And I took the tissue out. I didn't realize when I took the tissue out to blow my nose, the dollar fell out of my pocket as well. So I've made the decision that it's a good thing to do. I've made a resolution to do it, and now I'm putting it into practice, but I can't do it. I didn't do it because it was out of my control. The point is, in the realm of action, in the physical realm of things, that's out of my control completely. I can't control that. In the realm of the physical, I have no control over. I have no control whether the lights are going to go on and off, or I can't control the weather. I can't control anything which happens in the physical realm. But what I can control is my decisions. I can control my mind. I can control my thoughts. I can control my resolutions. Those things I can control, but the action, the fulfillment of the action, the fulfillment of those resolutions, I have no control over. That's in Hashem's hands. And the Gemara even says, another example of giving tzedakah, making a resolution to give tzedakah, you give tzedakah, and it turns out after you find out he's a swindler. So you had the intention to give the tzedakah, but you never gave the tzedakah because it went to a swindler, to a fake. So many examples. This is every single day of our lives, we are making decisions. And we think that we're also fulfilling the actions on those decisions. We're not. We're not fulfilling the actions on those decisions. Hashem is allowing those decisions to come to fruition. Because there's a gazillion things which could happen. I'm thinking about you just right now with the plane. I don't know if you want to, I should bring it up, but it's amazing. So it was a story we told me a few weeks ago about a decision which was made earlier, which changed the outcome because it's out of our control, right? Completely out of our control, because the actions we have no control in the physical realm. We have no control over that. But the decisions we have the control of, and that can go both ways, both for a good action, a good decision, a bad decision. Because a bad decision also, I could decide to do something, but I'm not worthy of that decision to come to fruition. I'll read what this book says over here. This is from Rabbi Miller, his Shiurim on the Parsha. This is Shabbos Shiurim. I'll read the paragraph. He says it so well. The Chovos HaLevavos, this is what I just quoted right now, distinguishes between the desire and the intention to do good or to do ill, which is given over to man, and the opportunity to fulfill this resolve, which God grants at times, but denies at other times. Perhaps the individual is not worthy of the good deed or the bad deed, and he's prevented from performing the action, an action on which he was definitely, determined. So, for example, the case of Yosef in Potiphar's wife, house later on in the parasha, according to one of our sages, Yosef had actually resolved to succumb to Potiphar's wife when all of a sudden the image of his father appeared before him, and with the result that he fled from her presence. So there he had decided to do a sin of committing an immorality with Potiphar's wife, but he was prevented from doing that because he saw the image of his father. It's unbelievable. So he made a decision to do the sin, and then Hashem stopped it from happening by producing in his mind the appearance of his father, which made him stop in his tracks. Conversely, say our sages, an uncharitable person will be denied the opportunity of true charity, for even when he dispenses charity, the recipient will be a swindler and not genuinely in need. So that's what happens in the reality of things. However, the deservance of an action to come to fruition does depend upon some degree of merit or demerit. In other words, what we're saying is that I could decide to go one way or the other way, and whether or not that's going to come to fruition is really up to Hashem's plan. But what's really determined that? What's determining that outcome despite my decision otherwise? So he goes on to explain. He says, that that's dependent upon a lot of history. It's dependent upon the history of my life and all the other decisions I've made in my life. Whether or not now I'm worthy of a particular decision right now is coming to fruition. So, for example, you know, let's bring it to Yosef and to the brothers, right? The brothers were jealous. They were jealous of him. But that action alone was not big enough. That jealousy was not large. That sin of jealousy really was not large enough in order to lead them to kill them, to kill Yosef. Because the outcome of killing Yosef was too big of a sin. And not commensurate with their initial jealousy. But they were jealous. They had the sin of jealousy. So what does Hashem do? Hashem takes those small decisions and now builds it into his bigger plan. He takes that those smaller choices which they made, the smaller choices of sin, and it can happen for the side of good as well. The smaller choices, either for good or for bad, Hashem will now use and either allow those decisions to come to fruition. He may magnify those decisions. He may take those decisions, those positive or negative decisions, and amplify them even more to bring about whatever the plan is, whatever Hashem's divine plan is. So in the case of the sin of the golden calf and the sin of David and Melech, it wasn't to say that they weren't guilty of anything. They were guilty of something, right? They were guilty of whatever they were guilty of other things. Without going into those individual parashas, they were guilty of smaller levels of sin, much, much smaller levels of sin. But Hashem took those decisions and then amplified them even more to bring about a much bigger sin in order to fulfill his plan. For example, in the case of the golden calf, in the case of David and Melech, in order to become examples of teshuva for the future. So to say that Hashem goes into a person's free will and completely whitewashes the person's free will completely and takes the free will away from the person completely in order to fulfill his plan, that would not be just. That would not be right. That's not what happens. Hashem does not take away the free will of a person away completely. He gives us a free will, but whether or not those choices we make are going to become what they're going to be translated into an action, you know, whether the action I want it to be translated into, or it's going to be translated into the level of the action which is commensurate with that particular sin itself, is all up to Hashem's decision. That's up to Hashem's plan, divine plan, whether or not it's going to be brought about to the level which the decision was. The point is, small decisions in the mind, right? Again, decisions are all in the brain. They're all in the mind. They're all in the heart. I'm getting nervous over it. Are you okay? No. You okay? Okay, fine. So small decisions are all in the mind and the heart. All decisions are in the mind and the heart, right? What those decisions are going to be translated into the world of action, that's all Hashem's department. So sometimes the decisions will not be manifest whatsoever. For example, it's a Docker example. It doesn't get translated into any action. Or sometimes it gets translated into and transmitted into an action, so to speak, much bigger than even the sin itself, because of Hashem's divine plan, because of Hashem, what Hashem wants for the world. So the decision the jealousy and the hatred, the enmity which they all felt towards their brother, to the outside observer, shouldn't result in such a drastic measure of wanting to kill and murder and destroy their brother. These are righteous people. You're right. It shouldn't translate into that. But Hashem wanted it to translate into that. Hashem wanted it because Hashem has a bigger plan. So he takes the decisions, takes the small decisions that people make, and then transmits them or translates them into the outcome that he wants, because there's a plan. And that's one of the fact. This is one of the principles of the interplay between free will and divine providence. The plan for the world is going to happen no matter what. Hashem is in control. He's running the show. To override a person's free will completely and to completely dismiss a person's free will doesn't happen. But he takes the choices we make. He takes all those choices, big and small, but even the small ones, and translates those and takes those decisions and directs those and brings about outcomes commensurate with the decision partially, but more importantly with the divine plan of what he wants for the world. That's what's happening. And this is actually similar to the Gemara, which says, this is a thing which we've spoken about many times before, I think we've spoken about it before, but there's a Gemara over here, which says that Tana Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in a Braisa, Altit mebehem nizamzimbom. Odom metama atzim at. A person can contaminate himself a little bit, but they will contaminate him a lot from on high. In other words, a person can make a small decision to contaminate himself, but it can result and mushroom into a much bigger contamination. Not just because a person becomes addicted and it gets worse and worse. There is a spiritual dimension of this as well. And similarly, a person can purify himself a little bit, and as a result, that small level of purification, that small level of holiness that the person chooses in his mind to take on, they are mekadesh and osaharbe. They now sanctify him exceedingly so from on high, because that small decision could end up becoming amplified in the causation for much greater things happening in the future. You know, this is sometimes you'll see people, you wonder like why was this person zocha to something. You know, why did this person merit to have such a tremendous thing happen to them in their life? Sometimes it could be the result of something they did many years ago, or even generations ago, right? It can come from different generations. You know, when it comes to all of the things which go on in our lives, one of the worst things to do is try to figure it out, right? That's the worst thing, to try to figure it out, try to figure out what Hashem is doing and the divine plan. It's the worst thing, because it gets you into a mental pretzel and confused and an emuna pretzel as well of spiritual doubt, etc. However, at the same time, while we can't figure it out and we shouldn't try and figure it out, but there are principles which we know. And one of the principles, we have free will, right? We have free choice. And we know that decisions we make don't necessarily get translated into action. They don't get translated into action because that's out of our realm. And also, small decisions can sometimes be mushroomed and amplified into massive outcomes because Hashem has a divine plan. If we think that our lives are being controlled by ourselves and we're just living our lives completely in control of where we're in control of ourselves, then it's utterly confusing. It's completely baffling and impossible to understand anything. And to even understand Hashem's ways is impossible to really understand. But we understand that there's us and there's Hashem. We are here. We are charged to make decisions. We're charged to make decisions. And Hashem is the ultimate conductor. He's the ultimate person, the ultimate one who's controlling everything. But he's always taking our choices. He's taking the free will choices which we're making and using those choices to bring about the plan which he wants to have orchestrated, right? So in this story, and we saw that with Paro as well in Mitzrayim, right? Paro is held responsible for the enslavement of the Jewish people in Mitzrayim, even though it was decreed upon them, because he's still using his free will. He didn't have to be the one to do it. There's different explanations for this, but he didn't have to be. But also, I shouldn't have brought that story up. It goes down a different road. We'll leave that for now. But the choice in the example right now of Yosef and the brothers, they are guilty. They had enmity. They had jealousy towards him. That was their sin. Should it have mushroomed to the level of wanting to kill him? Not necessarily. But for the sake of bringing about the outcome of Yosef going down to Mitzrayim, in order for Yaakov to go down Mitzrayim, in order for the tribes to go down Mitzrayim, Hashem utilized those choices and then amplified them and brought about these bigger consequences as a result. And the same thing with the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf. They made their wrong choices. Should they have committed the golden calf? No. But Hashem made that happen based upon the foundation of their earlier poor choices, in order to bring about the possibility of an example of teshuva for the Jewish people for the future generation. The same thing with David and Melech as well. So this is one of the principles. So the principles we learn over here is this: every small decision can make a massive decision, massive result. We can't underestimate. You know, I mean, another challenge when it comes to life's challenges, life's experiences. You know, we sometimes take on the responsibility too heavily of what goes on in our lives. Sometimes we take on the responsibility, we bear the responsibility of big things happening as my fault. It's not all my fault. It's not all my fault. It is my fault on a certain level, but it's also, there's a plan. There's a big picture plan for why things happen. And the most important thing we should be focused on is not the big decisions necessarily and the big outcomes of our lives, but the small decisions we make, the daily decisions we make, the small decisions, because those tiny, tiny decisions could be all contributing towards the big outcome which Hashem wants to have happen through those small decisions which we're making every single day. So every small decision is so powerful. Now, that's to the negative too, you know, but maybe let's not focus on the negative, let's focus on the positive. Every tiny decision, and this free will is in the brain, it's in the mind, it's in the heart and the mind. That's where free will is. It's inside the mind, inside the heart. So you decide right now to do something. You decide, you make a commitment in your mind right now to say the Shema. You make a commitment right now to say a bracha. You might, I'm going to keep Shabbos. I'm making these decisions. And these can be small decisions, right? Small decisions could eventually result and become amplified and mushroomed into a massive, massive, massive outcome for the benefit of the world, because Hashem takes those decisions and then orchestrates the world and life's events to fulfill the mission of existence. And that's how this is. I took this from this book over here called Shabbos Shiurim, and this is based upon other sources as well. But just so, this is the author of this book is an Englishman, so it's very makes it even better. So, there was one paragraph I wanted to read from this, which relates to that. Let's see if I can find it, because this was a very well articulate as well. Let's see. Yeah, we're over here. Give me 1 second. There was one line. Here, let's see. Right. So that's right. Because some of the brothers, once they allowed Joseph's tale-bearing and visions of domination to prejudice them against him, this was used by God to lead them astray, to make them jealous and afraid of Joseph and envious of his finer qualities. Finally, on that fateful day, they decided to do away with him and thwart his designs, because Hashem wanted that to happen, right? That's the idea. So every small decision we make, right, is so precious and so important and could be contributing towards massive, massive, massive outcomes, because Hashem has a plan and wants to take those decisions and give power to those decisions. So, you know, that's where, you know, our lives lie in the small decisions. And in the choices we make in our mind and heart, right? That's what we learn from this. Okay.